Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the beloved Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, from time to time, it's good to take a step away just for a moment from the presidential race to look at how the all-important congressional races are shaping up. And much as we did with the situation in Nebraska and Bob Kerry's horrific early poll numbers, we've got some more good news in a couple of other races. First of all, we know that John Kyle, unfortunately, is retiring in Arizona, but a very strong conservative, Jeff Flake, is likely to win the nomination. And right now, he's up 13 points in a projected general election matchup. Even better, perhaps, is in Florida, where Bill Nelson is certainly one of the Democrats who are considered to be most vulnerable in this election cycle. The Republicans have not done their nomination yet, but Congressman Connie Mack is believed at the moment to be the strongest in that field. He's got a 7-point lead in a hypothetical matchup with Nelson. And the best part there is Bill Nelson's only at 36%. Kind of reminiscent of what we talked about with Bob Kerry. So pretty good news so far that at least we're looking to hold one that we probably thought we should, and we got a real good shot at picking up another one.
Absolutely. It's worth noting that in Florida, a good portion of that may be people who think Connie Mack is former Senator Connie Mack. It helped to have a very famous name and a beloved, you know, they go back several generations, the Connie Macks. Each new generation, they create some new Connie Mack who's even more electable than the preceding generation. Worth noting that, you know, Nelson had been one of those Democrats who, you know, Republicans look in Florida can be a quite friendly state. Nelson is not a terribly high-profile Democratic Senate leader, so you kind of figured, okay, this is a guy who Republicans should be able to take on and beat. And for a good chunk of this cycle, Nelson was beating the other Republicans who had jumped into this race, several members of the state legislature, and had a pretty healthy lead for, you know, for much of 2011. And so there's kind of frustration on the part of many Republicans watching this race, saying, you know, there really ought to be a competitive race there, and it was not taking shape. And now things look very good for Connie Mack. In Arizona, Congressman Flake is a longtime pork fighter and probably a great partner for Senator John McCain in that category. A fairly Republican-leaning state. Democrats had had their hopes up in a rather perverse way, I would argue, that Gabby Giffords would be interested in running for Senate. Obviously, had she chosen to run for Senate, voter sympathy would have been an enormous factor. She chose not to do that and, in fact, chose to resign from the Congress, and so hopefully her recuperation continues. Not a terribly deep Democratic bench out there, and in normal circumstances, Republicans should have a fairly easy one there. Regarding New York and Bob Turner, certainly probably the most talented, politically talented candidate the Republicans in New York are going to get. It's New York State, a very heavily Democratic state. It's a presidential year. Chances are this is going to be very difficult for Republicans, even in the best of circumstances. Having said that, you know, Bob Turner knows how to win in some pretty difficult territories before. And if nothing else, you know, one of the lessons of 2010 is put your best players on the field. And you know, just hope that you get some momentum. Hope you get some win. You never know when if Martha Coakley can mock Red Sox fans, you know, Kirsten Gillibrand might mock Yankees fans or Mets fans or Giants or Jets fans or something. So, you know, or some scandal or you know, you just never know what's going to happen in politics. So in these circumstances, even in races that don't look very easily achievable, put your best candidates on the field. My understanding is that the Senate primary is that the Republican Party is going to decide the nominee tomorrow at the convention in Rochester. There are four Republicans. It's a bit messy. There's always, this is one of those states where you have the Conservative Party, and it's not clear that they're going to endorse Turner. They might endorse Wendy Long. I hope that the Conservative Party, the Republican Party in New York State, can unify, so to speak, and you know, run the same candidate, unify that level of support. Otherwise, Kirsten Gillibrand can, you know, plan the inauguration, you know, now. She should be, you know, otherwise she'll be in you know, great shape. Here's hoping for Bob Turner. Not looking like a great outlook, but hey, you know, his seat was eliminated in redistricting, so might as well, you know, swing for the fences and see what happens.
Yeah, I got nothing to lose. And unlike the seemingly never-ending presidential race, Bob Turner's grueling week-long Senate campaign is a nice contrast here. So at least to get the nomination. On to martini number two here now. And Jim, the president, once again on our dime, was at least pretty close to Washington when he made this overtly political speech. And once again, he likes to do what he does best, not just disagree with people in an honest and forthright manner, as he's always said in the past, but to mock what they've said and really distort what they've said. So here's the president talking about energy, basically accusing the Republicans of being Luddites. Here we go.
They dismissed solar power. They make jokes about biofuels. They were against raising fuel standards. I guess they like gas guzzlers. They think that's good for our future. We're trying to move towards the future. They want to be stuck in the past. And we've heard this kind of thinking before. Let me tell you something. If some of these folks were around when Columbus set sail, they must have been founding members of the Flat Earth Society. They would not have believed that the world was round.
It's been said so many times in the blogosphere and elsewhere, Jim. The president once again defeats a straw man for a position that doesn't exist on the other side. Conservatives are okay with exploring these other areas. They just don't like our tax dollars being funneled into firms that are going bankrupt, and they don't like the idea Obama's peddling that these can replace the traditional energy sources immediately, which clearly they can't.
Yeah, I mean, this is par for the course from this president, unfortunately. I do kind of think it is kind of striking that the guy who came out to the national scene with no red states or blue states, but red, white, and blue states, who gave this wonderful, eloquent speech about respecting our opponents in Tucson, et cetera, is now basically, one, completely distorting his opponents' views and just mocking them. The president of Solyndra, the president of Enter One, the president of, you know, $4 a gallon gasoline heading up to $5 a gallon. You could argue that energy policy is the single biggest failure under this president, and here he is mocking everyone who's questioning him. I think it says everything you need to know about this president. I don't think this is the move of a confident campaign. I think that you revert to mockery when you don't have as an effective countergroup of this. And, you know, as he said, he's just arguing that Republicans don't believe in alternative fuels. They do. They just simply, you know, don't believe that you can replace things with algae, as the president seems to think. I take it, you know, he drove out there. He's flying to fundraisers today, Greg. Air Force One runs on algae now, right, Greg?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
You know, and all those presidential limos and stuff. He's mocking others for gas guzzlers. You know, the presidential limo gets about 8 miles a gallon. Obviously, a good portion of that is for security reasons. But look, Obama demands sacrifices of others that he, you know, that are moot to him in his life because he lives a life of luxury that, you know, most Americans will never understand. He is completely immune from the consequences of his policies. The price of gas matters to him not one whit, nor to Stephen Chu, who doesn't have a car, or most of the other folks who have set this policy of restricting domestic exploration in the Gulf, in Anwar, and in fracking, and in all kinds of other ways. So this is, you know, this is what we come to expect from this president.
Can't leave a second martini without also reacting very briefly to this.
You know, one of my predecessors, Rutherford B. Hayes, reportedly said about the telephone, "It's a great invention, but who would ever want to use one?" That's why he's not on Mount Rushmore. Because he's looking backwards. He's not looking forwards.
A couple quick points here, Jim. Just a couple days ago, Dan Foster and I were commenting that it was weird that Obama was trying to raise money off of comments Sarah Palin made, since she's not really involved in this year's campaign. Now he's going back, what is it, 136 years to go after? It's Rutherford B. Hayes, sir, and you keep referring to him in the present tense. He's no longer alive. And his presidential library says he actually was a technophile and had Thomas Edison over at the White House many times. So, way to get your history wrong, and could you at least pretend like you've heard of the guy and pronounce his name correctly?
A lot of historians argue that he never made that statement attributed to him.
Right.
That is apocryphal. And I just observe, you know, if you ever thought, I never thought Obama would make me nostalgic for the days when he just bashed Bush. But he's really going back for all kinds of his president. Look, he inherited everything, you know, from all the mistakes of the presidents before. Nothing is ever his fault, Greg.
It's true. And I think what his advisors forgot to tell him, Rutherford B. Hayes is from Ohio. Important state in 2012. Don't be bashing President Hayes. On to martini number three now. And Jim, next door to Ohio, of course, is Indiana. And since 1976, that state has been represented in the U.S. Senate by one Richard Lugar. Unfortunately now, Marion County, Indiana, which is where Indianapolis is, has ruled that Lugar and his wife can't vote in the primary unless he establishes a residence there by April 9th, because turns out he doesn't actually live in the state anymore. If you're trying to fend off a pretty active primary challenger who's basically saying you've kind of lost touch with the people of Indiana, that's not a good issue to have going just about 6 weeks before the election.
It is not, Greg. Now, I have a slight sympathy for some lawmakers in this area, because if you think about it, they really have to work in two different parts of the country. They have to work in Congress. That is their place of work. We'd be very upset if they missed votes and were not doing their jobs on their committees and doing all the things that they're supposed to. But on the other hand, we don't want them to lose touch with their constituencies. And so we expect them to go back every weekend and interact with their constituents on a regular basis. So slight molecule of sympathy for Senator Lugar in this category. Having said that, I greatly prefer Richard Murdoch. I think he's a better choice. I think Lugar is not as conservative as a senator as Indiana could elect and should elect. And in fact, I think Lugar has given Obama the benefit of the doubt way too many times. There's a little bit of Democratic shenanigans going on here. This is the same arrangement that, you know, Dick Lugar has had for these circumstances for a long time. On the other hand, it says something about Lugar that he and his people did not keep an eye on this and did not recognize this as a potential problem. So, you know, look, you know, if you have indisputable residency in a particular area, you know, it's not much of an issue. I understand is that he has a farm somewhere in Indiana, but he does not actually have a residence on it. Little things like this will kind of, you know, suggest to people that you've lost touch with your state. And, you know, Murdoch should be able to capitalize on this.
Office couches. That's where you should be staying in your Washington, D.C. And if you can't handle that for 36 years, you shouldn't be there for 36 years. So, or afford a place in two different locations. You're certainly being paid enough to at least have an apartment somewhere back in the entire state of Indiana. So, Jim, I know you're still working on the cold medication. Be careful as you celebrate St. Patrick's Day. We want you to be here back on.
Cold medicine and Guinness are great together, Greg. Let me tell you. That's my spring health tip to all listeners out there.
Yeah. Kids, just ignore that part. Otherwise, Jim, have a great weekend.
All those kids drinking Guinness. Yes, Greg. You know, they'll be doing shots of whiskey later, too.
See you Monday.
On that happy note, see you on Monday.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Monday on the next 3 Martini Lunch.